for we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become clear, for the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort that it is. 1 Corinthians 3, 9-13. The religious environment of today is filled with individuals and groups building upon the foundation laid 2,000 years ago, some with gold, others with straw. Still others have chosen to attempt to relay that foundation. Join us on the first Sunday of the month as we find those who are building and examine just what it is that they are building.
Well, Brian, this is our first episode. This sounds like a lot of fun, don't you think?
Man, we talked about this for months, and kind of joked about it and laughed about it and decided to finally make it a reality. Here we are.
Yeah. So we're gonna have this podcast. We're gonna talk about cults and stuff. And we started off talking about cults and we even picked on what cult we wanted to start with because we have some somewhat personal connections to a cult. And then it realized that, well, we got to define what is a cult, right?
Right.
Because it's a big cultural thing to say, oh, them people are in a cult. I've been in churches before where people have said, oh, you're in a cult. You know, we used to joke around. We had a little hand signal. Our viewers can't see me, but I've got a little hand signal. It makes a little CL. Talk about our cult leader. We're like, oh, yeah, we're in the cult. We joke about it because some people thought we were because we were a little more fundamentalist, maybe a little more devoted. That was kind of the way we saw it to our practice of our religion. So we got to start off by defining what a cult is, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
We talked about this first episode, trying to figure out where we start the baseline. And since we're both Christians, some of these cult podcasts come from a very humanistic or maybe atheistic or I just don't have a religion side. But since we're both Christians, we're both professing Christians, that's kind of the lens we're going to look at things through, right? So this first podcast, we wanted to talk to y'all about what Christianity is and kind of give an objective look at it. But I do want to be upfront that I can't be terribly objective because this is my own faith and it's what I believe in.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know me, I spent, this weekend, the last couple of months leading up to this, buying books and figuring things out. Sat down today and put some thoughts on paper, finally, as to how do we define a cult. And it's very, in my opinion, it's a very dangerous place for us to be walking, right? It's very easy for us to say so-and-so is a cult, right? You've been a part of it, right? You've been on the receiving side and you know how that feels, right? For people to consider your group a cult.
Oh yeah. I mean, we joked about it, carried on, but I had family members who really just jumped onto me about this.
Right.
And I wasn't a member of a cult. I was a member of a traditional fundamentalist Baptist group, but they weren't and didn't really understand. And yeah, there's we turned it into a big joke. I will say that you're talking about you buying books to get ready for this. Last weekend, you and I were together looking at some books, and you suggested I buy this book, How to Be a Sinner.
Oh yeah,
a cult book.
Yeah, how's that one going?
Well, like I told you then, I could use some tips and tricks. I get a little better at that, But I find that interesting that you bought books to prepare for this, but then you suggested I buy a book on how to be a sinner. I'm not sure what you think about me there, buddy.
Well, it was really just a joke, and then you bought it anyway, but I hope it is actually making a big difference for you.
I'm not sure a big difference, but it's a really cool book.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of that whole got to get them lost to get them saved things, right?
Right.
And part of the reason I bring that up, one, to publicly, you know, hassle you on the podcast, but two, that's kind of what we are doing here with this whole Christianity thing. We got to have a basis before we start talking about what is a cult. And like you said, we gotta be careful what we call a cult. And right. You know, guys, we may get some of that wrong. Brian and I talked previously about trying to make sure that our facts were right when we're talking about these things. And they should be. But you're going to have some opinion in this. You know, I really think that we're going to have some opinion in. We may not always be 100% right. We will try to shy away from, we just think they're a little too much for us type things. I mean, I'm not a holiness person. You know, you're not going to see me up front shaking and carrying on, praising the Lord. It's not likely to see Matt doing that. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that. You know what I'm saying? Just because I don't do that. So we want to try to not go that far. But there are definitely lines that are very definite outside the realm of following Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And so I sat down and kind of started thinking, you know, a lot of the problems with cults come from the change, misapplication, removal altogether of particular dogmas of the faith, right? So my focus is very much theological, right? That's what my degrees are in. That's what I enjoy studying. So that's going to be where a lot of my focus goes as we do this. And so three major criteria that I've kind of picked as to whether determining something might be a cult, because obviously I don't think that I could outline every single criterion that we're going to utilize to determine if something is a cult, right? There's a lot of variables that go into it, and we'll talk about them as we find certain things, like the group that we're talking about next month, right? You have to take the whole in to really realize that they truly are a cult. But one of the theological concerns is, does the group that we're examining consider itself part of a larger faith group, right? In this case, because of the fact that you and I are professing Christians, the vast, vast majority of groups that we're going to look at use Christianity as their core, right? They talk about Christ, they talk about holiness, they talk about sanctification, they use all of these Christian words and terms, but they modify it, right?
Well, something to note on that, though, is that Christianity is the most popular religion in the world, the most, I don't say prosperous, probably, it's the most common religion in the world, in general, and Christianity shares origins with the next two most common religions. So there's a lot that kind of goes in between there, you know?
Right. Yep.
So that wouldn't be uncommon to be the basis to start with if you're kind of going to start your own thing. You know, years ago, I worked with a small Southern Baptist church, and I was learning how to go out and witness to people and tell people about Jesus. And one of the kind of tactics, one of the sales things we used, we didn't use that term, but I like that term because it's real accurate, is that we would apply things to people as they knew in their own world. You know, one common thing, you know, one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. You know, we would apply to things in people's own world. And so if I was going to start a religious group of any sort, I would start it and start explaining the concepts of that group based on things they know. One thing I've seen in some of these cults that we'll discuss is that they may profess to be a Christian group, but really when you break down their theology, there's nothing Christian whatsoever.
Right.
But they use that as their starting point, or at least to look like their starting point.
Right, which is my next point, Yeah, I don't know if you've got this document brought up on your screen.
I don't.
But
what document are we looking at?
The what is a cult document? It's only like 6,000 words long, man. It's not that bad. You can read it. No, it's not that bad. But the second one is, do the teachings of the particular group go against the core teachings of the faith which they claim? Right? Because if you're claiming Christianity, but then over here teaching something that's completely opposite of Christianity, there's a concern, right? A lot of cult leaders manipulate that dogma and doctrine of the root faith to make theirs fit. And then at the same time, are there added teachings to that core? Right? Did it get expanded on beyond the bounds that were set by the core with the purpose of controlling and commanding adherence?
Well, they often have to have something to have that, so they have some sort of authority to start with in order to say other things, in order to be that person.
Yep.
They've got to start somewhere, and so they've got to start with some sort of authority. I'm the prophet. I'm the Messiah. Right. I'm the chosen one who can read the thing. I'm the one that God talks to. That sort of thing. You gotta start with some sort of authority. I feel like we're talking about how to build a cult 101 here.
Well, we kind of do have to look at it that way. As what do you need to make a cult?
Yeah.
Right? So that way, as we look at and examine groups, like, this is from the book that I bought, Neo-Gnosticism. That's a perfect one because it doesn't really fit a particular subset. You know, as we look at Neo-Gnosticism, right, we need to know, what does that mean, right? How do they fit cult theologically? I also picked out a couple of social ideas, which is kind of more your forte, things that I know you know more about than I do.
Well, it adds to what you were saying there on the social thing. So what's a common thing that I see in some of these cults is that, yeah, they start off with one thing, and then they have some sort of premise for why they're the chosen one to say something, right? And then it starts centering, like you make a note here, about around a person or a family. And people are sinners, right? Yes. None are good, no, not one. And sometimes these cults start off on, if not a good place, if not a biblical place, at least a morally noble place. Like, they may be wrong, but they at least were trying to do the right thing.
Yep.
And then they devolved into scariness.
Right.
And devolved into self-centered, and devolved often into sexual sin, devolved often into violence and abuse and things like that. They rarely start those things. You know, Jim Jones ended up ordering his followers to suicide. It was horrible, horrible, right? But he started because he wanted to help poor black people who were not being abused in society, right? Tony Alamo, you know, they started, Tim and Susan started because they were trying to help lost people on the streets find a purpose in life. And then it ended with him horribly abusing children and raping little girls and all this horrible stuff, you know? Sin came in because people are sinners. And then when you give one person power like that, that gets corrupted. Even in the Bible, we see where sin took hold of something that might have been good and corrupted it. Look at King David. That's the famous example right there. This little boy had the faith to walk out when God said, go out there and take down this giant. And he had the faith to go do it, okay? And then the king is coming after him, and he's hiding in caves and all this, but God says, you're going to be the king. And he had the faith to do all this. And then he sees a naked woman taking a bath, and he's out trying to kill people and having illegitimate babies.
Right.
Sin will eat you up, no matter who you think you might be.
Yep.
And that's for the people who were actually serving God. Think about it if you're just completely illegitimate. It's going to be worse. So that is the social aspect you see that comes across. And then there's the thing of service. People want to serve somebody. It's hard to serve a unknown god. It's easier to serve a known god in a group, okay, which is what we kind of try to encourage in Christianity. But it's even easier just to serve a person, you know? It's even easier. And there's a lot of people who think, oh, I'd never be that way. And then all of a sudden they end up in this cult. And you never start with their ordering you to do horrible things. You start with the little stuff first. You give up your little freedoms first. Then all of a sudden you've given up everything. That's the social side of it. And as we examine these cults, we're going to look at that. And we're going to see a lot of people look at this and they're like, why? I would never fall for anything like that. But then as you hear the stories of people who did, it's not that they fail for anything. They were tricked, but it was slow. It's never a large thing. It was slow, and or there was some severe trauma involved.
Right. Yep. So I included, some additional, criteria. Obviously, this is not the exhaustive list, but we want to look at how the group is perceived, right? How does society around them look at the group, right? This is much more subjective, right? Because your church was considered a cult at one point, right? I know that it wasn't, because I know you and I know your pastor, right? It was never a cult. It was just filled with people who were extremely zealous for Christ, right? So perception is not a singular, oh, society says they're a cult, so therefore they are a cult, right? But if there are groups that we look at and then we also see society considers them a cult, they probably fit that category a lot better.
So it reminds me of a conversation we had last week. We discussed how we know from where we're from a fairly popular contemporary Christian music artist. I won't say their name because I'm going to say some bad things about them. But back in the day, before they were a popular contemporary Christian music artist, they were just a small town preacher. And their group was much more charismatic than a lot of other groups. And I used to do Christian music promotion and things back then. And I would run across them at events and different things all the time. And you knew when their group came in, because they acted weird. They come in and do all this jumping and carrying on. And in our small town, that was a weird thing. Now I live in Dallas, and that wouldn't be a weird thing. I even go to a Southern Baptist church, but it still wouldn't be weird if people were jumping in service. That's okay. That's pretty normal. The groups that he's with now as a contemporary Christian artist, it wouldn't be all that weird to raise your hands and be jumping in service and I don't, you know what I mean? Versus it was considered weird because of the cultural at the time.
Right.
So yeah, there's that, and that doesn't necessarily make you a cult, but right. It does have some apply, and you'll see it's a common thing for cults to pull themselves away from society, right?
Yep.
Which I know where you're going next.
Yep. Yeah, as cults, as society begins to look at groups as a cult, more often than not, those groups isolate, right? Because for one, they don't want their adherents to hear themselves being called a cult and think, oh, maybe I'm in a cult and I should leave. But two, because they're tired of people looking at them, right? They're tired of people seeing what it is that they're doing, right? So that's yet another decent marker for determining if something is a cult.
But not once always. Again, it's not always, because right. Look at the early Christian church.
Right.
There were times when they had to isolate, they had to pull away a little bit.
Yeah.
There were times when they were persecuted. And even look at churches now. There are very legitimate churches now that do a lot of worship in private.
Yeah. And there's a group, I've got his book here. They have their own little community in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, somewhere in that area, and they're very much a traditional Christian group, and they've just chosen to go and live a more isolated life and get away from the world, more like a monastery than a community or a city, right? They're just living together.
Yeah, and I know, from a lesser extent, I'm sure we both have friends who homeschool their children.
Right.
Right? They, you know, one parent or both parents or whatever, they stay at home and they homeschool their children. Some people form collectives and do that. They don't participate in all of society, in our society. So it's not necessarily such a bad thing. And I'm sympathetic to some of that. Like, mm-hmm. I could see myself totally moving out to a farm and just being done with all this. I love living in the city, but I'd move to the farm tomorrow.
Right. You know? I don't blame you. So I think that covers, you know, we have, you know, at least an understanding that we do know that we're looking for particular things. So we're not just picking random groups that we don't like out of a hat and saying, oh, they're a cult. Because if we were doing that, there's a whole bunch of groups that would be in the hat that are not cults, right?
Well, let's bring this up too. There are some groups that are cults that if we were to bring them up and our podcast did have any traction, they would come after us.
True. Very true.
And that's something we have to be aware of and decide, is that worth speaking on or not? Would us speaking help anybody? It's us, we need to speak on it, or is it not really going to help anybody and just hurt us?
Right. Which is one of the reasons that we do have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where each month, you know, I'm going to post all of our references for all of the things that we have gone and researched ourselves and provide it for our listeners, so that it's not just coming from us, right? It's as many primary sources as we can get our hands on.
Now, unless you cross me on Facebook, then we're going to do an episode on you.
Well, that's true.
So watch out, preacher friends.
Yep, there you go. So, Matt, we've kind of decided on a general flow as we discuss each group, right? We want to look at the group's history, you know, so get some factual, objective information just about the group, right? Not anything in depth, just when they existed, where they existed, number of adherents, things like that. We want to look at the group's theological positions would be a good word, and then their social / story, right? What were they doing? You know, how did they grab so many people? You know, what differences did they make in their communities? What differences have been made because of them? Things like that. Sound like a plan?
Yeah. I was pulling up your second document here.
Oh, which one?
I hadn't read that one.
Okay, yeah, Christian theology. So let's take a step back, right? Now that we have defined some of our expectations, right? And just look at Christianity, right? If we're comparing all of these groups to Christianity, we probably need to have at least some sort of a baseline. Wouldn't you agree?
I would.
Okay. So
you wrote 21 points on it.
I actually
wrote 40.
I acquired those. It's sourced at the bottom from a book that I have from my favorite podcaster. So, but let's start with the history of Christianity, right? Let's try and follow our anticipated path, right?
Yeah.
So Christianity, you've got here that it was founded by Jesus in the first century AD.
Mm-hmm. So there's the thing about that. So Christianity was founded by Jesus in the first century AD, because before Christ there was no Christianity, right? So, but let me keep going. Because you'll notice I have other words after that.
Right, yeah.
Because we're like, well, then what happened before that, right? Christianity as a religion wasn't Christianity until Jesus. Until he was born, he had his ministry, and he died. However, right. We believe that the God of Christianity is the sovereign supreme being. He is God, the one, the only, right? And the creator of the universe. And that started, Christianity started in Judaism and tracks back through the covenant with Abraham and even beyond that into Noah and through the whole creation story in Genesis. So really Christianity started at the beginning, right?
Right.
It's traditionally said Christianity started in the first century, and that's kind of more the secular answer. That's when people started calling themselves Christians, which was actually a little after that. That's when you would say there was the beginning of that.
That's still not even correct.
But we believe that the God is the one and only God, so thus he's the creator of the universe, so Christianity would have had to start there.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of that weird, nuanced, because as we get into theology, we'll agree, at least I assume that you and I agree, that God is the creator of all things, including time, and therefore he exists outside of time. And with Christ being eternal, Christ was active long before his incarnation.
He had the ministry here on earth at that time. No, in Genesis, there's references that I think explain the Trinity.
Absolutely. Yeah. But even then, the earliest church was still members in the synagogue, and they were still going to the synagogue at their regular times, you know, and practicing as the Jews did. So they didn't really even split until a couple hundred years later and became two separate entities. So it's really kind of a strange, Christianity has kind of always been there, but not always named as such. But nonetheless, it was founded by Christ.
Now you're making the argument that the Baptists were on the shores of Galilee. You're making the argument for me, buddy. I appreciate it. With the whole statement of it's always been there.
Right, yeah, true. So Christ died. He was born roughly 4 BC. So if you decided to say it was at his birth that Christianity began, it was the first century BC, not AD. But because, it doesn't start with year zero.
We don't know exactly. And the time starts counting of when he was born. And there are people who have come back since and said, well, that actually changed.
Right.
It really doesn't matter.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. The historical fact, right, the individual details don't matter. What does matter is God became incarnate in Jesus Christ through Mary, lived, died, was buried, and rose again within the first century. And that started the path that we're on now. Right, that sets us at a point where we can be one with God. And that's the big deal. There's so much history to the church. You know, there's, even if you say, you know, the end of the first century AD when John died was the beginning of Christianity, you're still looking at nearly 2,000 years of history. Yeah, so there's no way that we can cover all of that in this short discussion. There are thousands of different Christian groups. The Protestants being the largest number of splits, right? I've seen numbers as high as like 25,000 or 30,000 different Protestant denominations. Then you have the Catholics and the Orthodox before them. But there's nearly 3 billion people in the world that claim Christianity. That's nearly half of the world's population. If it's still at 7 billion, I'm assuming the population's still at 7 billion. It was a few years ago, but that's a pretty big deal. That's a huge subset of people in the world that claim Christ.
Well, and I think it's important to understand that there are others who don't claim Christianity, but claim origin from the same God.
Right.
Doesn't mean that, I'm not saying they're right. I'm just saying they claim origins from the same origin, the same creation origin that Christianity does, that covers even more of the world. And so, yeah, there's a lot of division. There's a lot of difference. But I think there's some basics that are the same. And that's what we have to kind of go on. And a lot of these cults, like you mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about, are going to be different in several different ways. I think a cult is a unique phenomenon.
Yes.
That is not just a different denomination, you know?
Right, exactly.
You and I have differences, and we never have been of the exact same denomination. We've both been Baptists, but we've been different Baptist denominations. And as you explore more Orthodox stuff, and I'm still very Southern Baptist, we have different views and things, but I think we agree on a lot of the basics. And I think we both recognize that we're still following Christ, even if we are doing it in a little different ways.
Right. Yep.
And I think that's important to know. And that's why we want to talk about Christianity like this, is understand that we're not trying to say these people, if you don't do it exactly like us, you must be a cult. That's not exactly what we're trying to say. But we do want to examine the cults because it's a topic that people will be interested in and they'll want to listen to. But also, I think it's important that we know and we look out for these things. I'm hoping that through this podcast, we can actually be helpful to somebody as they're looking at things. I was looking at a very popular cult's live feed the other day. And, you know, if I didn't already know some things about my faith, I could very well see how my mind, analytical like it is, could really come to some conclusions and be like, oh, that actually makes sense. You know, their outward thing is, wow. And, you know, they're going more of a more liberal side. Other, you know, cults go on a more conservative side. And then, oh, wow, I'm trying to protect my family. I'm worried about the foreigners. I'm worried about people who may take my jobs. Well, those are valid worries. And people start with that and then get into the extreme as they go. So if we can be helpful to somebody to help identify that and steer them away from it, I mean, I just want to be completely blatant that, you know, part of the goal of our podcast is we do want to steer people to Christianity and belief in Christ.
Yes, absolutely.
We are not trying to be impartial here whatsoever. yep. Jesus Christ, one and alone, is the way.
Yep, so let's look briefly. We're not going to hit all 21 points of Christian dogma, but I do think it's wise that we pick out a couple, right? I can post this whole thing into our blog post or whatever. We've already mentioned that we're fairly firm, not fairly, extremely firm on there is one God who created all things out of nothing, right? God himself is uncreated. God is three persons who are one essence or consubstantial, right? They are of the same essence, but they are individual persons, equal in deity, power, honor, and eternality, right? This is a big one, right? It's one that is going to set a couple of groups likely in our sights of groups to talk about, because they do deny the Trinitarian God. So they have at least broken away from that element of dogma. We believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God, second person of the Trinity, fully divine and fully human. Jesus is the Messiah that was prophesied in Hebrew scriptures. And then we get into more areas where you and I diverge. But the areas in which we most certainly do agree on, there is one church, and Christ is, it is the body of Christ, of which Christ is the chief member and sole head. Right? He is in charge. And Christ will return to the earth one day to rule and reign and take us all home. And I can see you reading still.
I was reading through all your red, man.
Yeah, there's quite a bit that I think you and I diverge on.
Yeah, the English language. You got parroting words down a little bit.
Like I said, this is Father Andrew's work.
Go over 21, though.
Christ will return again to earth, which will be the end of time and of reality as we know it. All those who remain alive in the earthly life will then be transitioned into the next life, where everyone else awaits them. All the dead will then rise again, reuniting their bodies with their souls eternally. Everyone will be judged according to what they did in this life.
Okay, so the reason I asked you to go over that is I think that's so important, and it's going to be very important as we look at these cults, because that's often where they go off. That's true. A very common place is the what's going to happen when Christ returns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us here in the world have a really great life. There's a time when I would have told you my life sucks, and I don't know why I've been born into this, but right now, dude, I'm so crazy, stupidly blessed. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Like, I have a really great life here on Earth. And not everybody does, okay? There are people out there freezing right now in the street corner while we're sitting in our nice warm places. And so it's often a thing in cult leaders to provide some sort of hope for people. And they'll teach a doctrine of what will happen in the end. And this is a very valid Christian doctrine that Jesus is coming back. We have our hope in Christ. This is not our final destination. This is not our home. I feel like I want to get up and preach about it, right? That's a very common thing to preach, and it's a thing that Christ preached. It's the thing that the apostles preached. It's a very core tenet of Christianity. But what a lot of these cults have done is corrupt that and change what's going to happen. We made a passing reference earlier to the Haley Bopp comic. You know, there were some people who thought when that comet came by, there was a spaceship behind it that was going to take people's souls, and they had to get ready, and so they had to kill themselves to relieve themselves of their earthly bodies. They were looking for the same hope that we just discussed, but their leader got it wrong and caused them destruction instead of salvation. So we mentioned about wanting to be very apparent that we're looking at this from a Christian perspective, as we are Christians. And, you know, we hope that people would come to Christ with knowledge. And that right there is a responsibility. So what we're really covering in these cults is where leaders have failed. They've led people the wrong way. I think the Bible's very clear that if you're in a position of leadership, there's some honor bestowed upon you, but there's also, the word's not condemnation, what is it? It's doubled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so also, you know, you're going to be accountable. There's accountability for that. And what we're going to be talking about over and over again is going to be how they failed at this and often are held accountable for it. And if they're not held accountable here, they will be held accountable in the spiritual afterlife. When Christ comes back, he's going to hold people accountable. So,
yeah, it's these few items are the ones most commonly manipulated, diverged from, but there are so many more areas in which things get manipulated. So, Matt, what is the story? What comes next, right? What is the purpose and plan of Christianity?
Well, we started back with Christ. We started talking about that Christianity started with Christ. And yes, God created everything, and we can say that the beginning was there. But using the word Christianity, the term of following Christ, started with Christ. And Christ left us with the Great Commission, right? And so the point of Christianity, the point of the church, is the Great Commission, is to bring other people into that fold. And through history, that's happened. And there's been a lot of divergence in that through the church. Some good things have happened. You know, through history, the church has decided to use the example of the Good Samaritan and help people who weren't even necessarily part of the church to heal the sick. There are great hospitals all around the world built by the church right now that are helping people, okay? There's great scientific breakthroughs that have happened because the church did work in the medical field and things. There are people who are being fed who would starve to death if it wasn't for people of the church coming together to help them. There are whole kingdoms that were built because of the church, okay? But on the other side, the history of Christianity is a negative one as well. We have things like the Inquisition and the Holy Crusades and things like that. We have these cults that have developed out of things. We have things that were the church made horrible decisions. The denomination I'm part of, for years and years, rejected black people and acted as if they weren't real people, you know? There are bad things that have happened for Christianity, too. It doesn't make it not Christianity just because bad things happen, and it doesn't mean we should tolerate those bad things either. But there's a long history of that. A lot of the divisions have been over, well, how do we believe this and how do we believe that? Some of those were stupid arguments that nobody should have had, and it was sinful. Some of those were very valid arguments, and they should have had those arguments. You and I may disagree on some of those arguments where they should have landed, but I think we agree on a lot of them.
Yes.
So there are different viewpoints in actual Christianity that we wouldn't call cults, but I think that cults often lead to personal destruction for their members, and that's important to notice.
Cool. So I think, you know, our goal was 35 minutes or so. We're a little bit over that for this first episode, but we had a lot more to cover than I think we will as we start talking about our first cult. So you've already mentioned them. I know you kind of mentioned them in passing, but our first group that we're going to look at on the first Sunday of April will be Tony Alamo Ministries. Mm-hmm. Tony Alamo was active from like 78, 79 up through today. I mean, he himself has since died, but the ministry still lives on.
Which is just, I have no idea how that's possible, but we're going to discuss that. Like,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So that'll be a good one. Come join us the first Sunday of April.